stood at the windowless helm. Slung weapons protruded over their backs, and bandoliers crisscrossed their armored chests. X moved the scope to a crate resting on the back deck. Three more men stood at the gunwales, weapons cradled. They were coming for the Seawolf, with a small army and plenty of guns, and they were quickly closing the gap. The one-man craft suddenly shot ahead, thumping over Whitecaps, the driver jolting up and down. X had waited a long time for this, but despite the longing for revenge, he didn't feel prepared. His plan had been to surprise these murdering scum, and now he would have to improvise. He lowered his rifle, staring out over a horizon the color of a ripe apricot. In the distance, miles beyond the boats, he saw structures. Carmine and gray towers rose on stilts above the water, looking like giant spiders. Of course, the Metal Islands. He focused on the nearest of the towers. He had seen these in picture books. The fabled Metal Islands weren't actually islands. They were oil rigs. Dozens of them lined the horizon, forming a colony in the sea.
X, what are you...
Magnolia began to call out. He cut her off with a gravelly shout.
Get to the command room, kid, and use the cameras instead of opening the hatch. I'm gonna need you on the controls, but do not raise that hatch. We're about to have company.
Cazadores?
About eight of the ugly fuckers. Three vessels. Grab your rifle and everything you can carry.
Magnolia went back inside the cabin, and he used the time to think. They couldn't outrun the boats using their sails. Hell, if they turned now, they would be tacking into the wind. No, there was only one option. They had to fight. X aimed at the rider on the one-man craft and shot him in the chest. The strange little boat coasted several yards farther as the man splashed into the sea and vanished. X pulled a grenade from his vest and loaded it with a click. Magnolia stood in the open hatch below, holding her automatic rifle, apparently having forgotten his orders. A bandolier of shotgun shells hung around her neck, and she had a blaster holstered and her curved blade over her back.
"What the hell are you doing?" he shouted.
"I want to fight. Let Timothy command the boat."
She stood there looking up at him from below, a hand shielding her visor. Human eyes weren't used to real sunlight.
"No,"
X boomed.
"Get to the control room."
She hesitated, then went back inside. X was already aiming at the yacht. It had powered past the fishing boat and the idle one-man craft, not stopping to check whether its rider was alive. A wide-shouldered man behind the wheel of the boat came into focus. X wasn't sure how far out they were, but they were close enough for him to see the octopus symbol on an armored plate covering the man's chest. Goggles covered his face, but X had a feeling he knew this man.
"El Pulpo, we meet again," X muttered, zooming in closer.
This was the king of the Cazadores, the man who had killed Roger and tried to kill X and Miles back in Florida.
"Hurry up, Mags," X said, "and Pepper, you make sure she doesn't do anything stupid."
"Sir, thank you for entrusting me with that decision."
X had been prepared to shut the AI down, but the threat he posed was merely a potentiality. The Cazadores, on the other hand, were a clear-cut danger, and the small crew of the Seawolf needed all the help it could get. Magnolia's voice came over the channel.
"Okay, X, I'm at the controls. Tell me what to do."
"You see those boats on the monitor?" X asked. "Mags?"
"Holy wastes," she replied. "I see the boats and the Metal Islands."
He swore quietly when he realized she had ignored his order to keep the hatch closed. Looking out over the open water, X watched the two boats. They were only half a mile away now, and several men on the deck were raising weapons.
"Close the hatch," he shouted at Magnolia, "and keep going straight."
"Working on it."
He shouldered his rifle, waiting for the opportunity. The yacht was making a run at them now. X lined up his shot, then launched a grenade just ahead of the yacht. He pulled the trigger and watched the grenade zip through the air. A geyser shot up just shy of the bow. Water rained down, drenching the two men behind the helm. Muzzle flashes came from the fishing boat, and rounds cut the sail below X. He moved the rifle muzzle to the fishing boat and fired directly in front of it. This time, the grenade exploded against the bow. The fiery blast sent one of the Cazador soldiers flying into the ocean, his clothes burning. The vessel stalled in the water, smoke billowing away from the twisted metal. X pivoted to fire on the yacht, just as a flare lofted away from the boat. He watched as it arced through the air in what seemed like slow motion. His eyes followed it downward, beneath his boots. The tip caught on the face of the wolf, the flames quickly consuming the emblem and spreading outward.
"Son of a bitch," X growled.
He opened fire on the yacht, holding the trigger down. The pilot turned hard to starboard, sending up a spray of water. X peppered the hull with bullets. The Seawolf skimmed past the yacht, Magnolia holding the same bearing, the mizzen sail catching enough wind to keep them moving. After weeks of cursing the rain, X would give about anything for some now.
"Turn, Mags," he shouted.
"Turn where?"
"Port side, port side!"
The rudders moved, and X pivoted for a shot as the yacht tried to flank them. Thick smoke from the burning sail made him cough and obscured his vision. He gave up trying to find a shot and climbed out of the crow's nest. Rounds from the yacht punched through the metal, and one perforated the mast just above his head. The snapping sound that followed sent a chill through him, but he had scant time to react. It wasn't a bullet that broke the line holding the mast in place. It was the fire. The mast snapped forward, catapulting X into the air. He had a momentary view of the metal islands in the distance, but it quickly vanished as sparkling clear water rose up to meet him. Bubbles exploded around him, and he lost his rifle on impact. He kicked for the surface. The rifle was as good as gone now.
"Mags,"
X said between gasps. He piked and then surface-dived, kicking for his life, just before the hull of the yacht passed overhead. The propellers churned the water where he had been 2 seconds before. Filtered air filled his lungs, but the helmet was a double-edged sword. The armor was heavy, and it made swimming difficult. He kicked away, staying well below the surface and searching for the shadow of the Seawolf. Although the water around him was clear, the depths were as dark as a stormy sky. And he already knew what lurked below. These warm waters were home to more predators than just the Cazadores. Magnolia's voice broke over the channel.
"X! X! Where are you?"
"Overboard. Just hang on."
But for what? Though X could hear the yacht's engines, he had no good idea where it was or how far he was from the Seawolf. He would have to break the surface to find out. Kicking and breaststroking, he fought his way to the top. When he was just below the surface, he used his arms to slow his ascent so that little more than the top of his helmet broke through the water. The clouds had parted directly overhead, revealing the unobstructed sun. He squinted at the bright rays. Treading water, he turned in a slow circle. Both boats were floating side by side some 200 meters away. Several Cazadores were already boarding the Seawolf with rifles and spear guns. One man remained on the port side of the yacht, looking over the barbed wire and searching the water.
"Mags, you're about to have company," X said. "Don't let them inside. Wait for me. I'm almost there."
X slowly sank back under the waves and began swimming under the surface. He took in slow, measured breaths, careful not to use up the small oxygen reserve in his helmet. He reached for the blaster on his hip, then changed his mind and pulled the serrated knife from the sheath on his duty belt.
"Come on, come on."
A garbled message came over the channel.
"Should I send a mayday with our location?"
Magnolia asked, her voice shaky. X was surprised to hear her ask. The guilt from her decision to send the Red Sphere coordinates had likely stuck with her, but this time it was different. Finding the metal islands was worth the risk.
"Do it," X said. "Send an SOS to the Hive and Deliverance."
He submerged deeper as he approached the Seawolf, going all the way under the hull. On the starboard side, he came up and grabbed the edge where the octopus had torn the barbed wire away. There was no one in sight on the deck. He waited several seconds, then grabbed the starboard gunwale. The two Cazadores had already broken through the first hatch. Gunfire cracked, and Miles barked from inside the cabin.
"Hell no, you don't," X said.
He reached up to the rail and was pulling himself aboard when a net suddenly fell over him. A soldier wearing goggles emerged overhead and kicked him in the helmet so hard the glass cracked. X flew backward, still draped in the net, and hit the water with a splash. Bullets hit the water, zipping past him in white streaks.
"Max! Miles!" X yelled.
He kicked and pulled, but the net had him enshrouded like a captured fish, and water was already coming in through his cracked visor. During the lull in the gunfire, he could hear Magnolia's shouts over the comm channel. Dark smoke drifted from the last shreds of the burning mainsail. More gunfire shot through the water. X waited for the soldier to empty his magazine, then kicked his way to the surface trying to get free of the net. It was the big-shouldered man with the octopus tattooed on his chest, glaring over the side. He pulled up his goggles for a better view of X, revealing a beakish nose. It wasn't El Pulpo after all. The man gave X a sharp-toothed grin, then let out a laugh. X fell back beneath the water. He tried to cut through the net with his blade, but his arm was constricted, making it almost impossible. He sank deeper this time, as water rushed through the crack and filled his mouth. Spitting, he tried to keep from swallowing. Magnolia's voice crackled through his speakers.
X! X, where are you?
He thrashed harder, but he couldn't get free. The hull of the Seawolf blurred as he sank deeper and deeper.
No, you have to keep...
He heard Miles barking. Or was it his imagination? X squirmed harder, finally freeing the knife. It slid out of his grip and he grabbed it with his other hand, then slashed through the netting. His lungs burned, and he fought the urge to suck in seawater, all the while sawing away at the netting. He finally got free and kicked back under the boat toward the port side. Pausing to tread water in the space between the Seawolf and the Cazador boat, he caught his breath and blinked away the blur. His vision finally cleared, and he prepared to flank the enemy soldier. Another scrambled transmission flared over the channel, but this one he couldn't make out. He continued swimming in the space between the two boats when the yacht's engines revved, churning the water behind him and launching the boat away. Though caught in the wake, he managed to grab onto something hanging off the gunwale of the Seawolf as the props thrust him away. The moving water pulled him, and the strand of barbed wire that he had unwittingly grabbed cinched tight around his gloved hand, cutting into the flesh. The wire uncoiled from the rail as the yacht's wake pushed him backward. He fought the prop wash, treading and watching as the yacht sped away. Working the wire with both hands, he finally managed to get free, but the damage was already done. Blood leaked from several cuts. He kicked back to the port side and looked over the rail. The Cazador, who had netted him, was still peering over the starboard gunwale, searching the water with his rifle. X slowly pulled himself up, wincing from the pain in his hand. As soon as his boots hit the deck, he was running. Halfway across the deck, he slipped and fell. The Cazador whirled with his rifle aimed at X, laughing.
"Ahora mueres," the man said.
X rolled left as the man pulled the trigger. Bullets slammed into the deck. A snapping sound came from across the boat, followed by a guttural oomph. He braced for the bullets, but they never came. X pushed himself off the deck and walked over to the Cazador, who was now pinned by a spear to the cabin wall. The soldier held on to the shaft that had impaled his chest right through the octopus logo.
"Are you okay, Commander?" said a voice over the comms.
Realization set in as X approached the man. Timothy had saved his hide by firing one of the mounted spear guns. Blood trickled out of the soldier's mouth as he tried to say something to X.
"I'm fine, Pepper. Where are Miles and Mags?"
"They took them. I'm sorry, sir. I couldn't..."
X walked back to the man and used his knife to trace a line across his throat. He wiped the blade on the Cazador's chest before resheathing it.
"There is something called a wave runner not far from here," Timothy said. "You can take that to go after Magnolia and Miles. I'm also going to replay the audio from their capture, translated into English, to help you."
X watched with grim satisfaction as the Cazador took his last gurgling breaths. The guy was a strong bastard, and he kicked several times before his eyes finally rolled up in his head.
"Listen to this, Commander," Timothy said.
The translated message crackled in his helmet.
"Let's take this firecracker back to El Pulpo. We're going to get a handsome fee for this one."
"What about the dog?"
"Maybe he will let us eat it."
Julio, you stay here and make sure that other guy's dead. We'll send boats back later to get you and to scavenge this wreck.
The translation ceased, and X looked out over the water. He could see the wave runner. It would take him a while to swim there. He hurried over to start gathering the weapons and supplies he would need to save Miles and Mags.
I'll keep transmitting as long as I can, but I have a feeling this might be the last time we speak, Timothy said.
Thanks, Pepper, X said. For the record, I'm glad I didn't shut you down.
19. Katrina stood on the bridge of the naval warship looking out over the broad deck and a helicopter landing pad. Gun turrets and machine guns pointed at the dark waters ahead. Jaijeet patrolled outside, his blue battery unit glowing in the darkness, holding one of the two laser rifles they had brought back from Red Sphere. Katrina had considered going back for more of the weapons and the satellite dish to help boost their signal. They still hadn't been able to contact Deliverance, the Hive, or the Seawolf, but she decided it was too risky to return to the facility. Who knew how many more robots were waiting inside the facility below Red Sphere? No, for now they needed to stay the course, even if it felt as if they were drifting farther away from their home. Deliverance was still hovering 25,000 feet above Red Sphere, where she had instructed Ensign White to remain until further orders. She moved over to the helm, where Layla had connected her mini-computer to start the ship. The powerful device was almost the same thing as having an AI on board, with the added benefit that they didn't have to worry about the computers killing them. Katrina brushed the dust off a plaque on the bulkhead, centered between two portholes. USS Zion. Zumwalt Class. DDG 1012. Commissioned in 2031. Hundreds of years ago, a naval officer, maybe even a captain, had once stood on the bridge where she was now. Someone with a family, with hopes, with dreams. They had given orders that affected not only the lives of their crew, but also the lives of thousands, maybe even millions of others. Those orders had likely helped lead to the events that left Katrina in charge of some of the last survivors of the human race. The irony wasn't lost on her. Her last orders had killed two precious helldivers and injured two more. A tarp covered the headless corpse of Aaron Jenkins a few rooms away. At least they had been able to bring her body onto the ship. There was some consolation in knowing she wasn't still back there. The same couldn't be said for Ramon Ochoa. The green diver was forever lost to the cold waters. The thought sent a chill through Katrina. It was odd to think that a man who had spent his entire life in the sky would spend eternity in the darkness of the vast sea, never having set foot on solid earth. But of course, he wasn't the first diver left behind. Plenty of others had left their frozen bones back in Hades and elsewhere. She studied the plaque another moment. What had happened to the crew? Why hadn't the machines used this boat to leave Red Sphere after killing Dr. Diaz and his team?
Captain, can we have a moment? Said a deep voice.
She turned to see Les and Layla entering the bridge. How are Michael and Edgar? She asked them.
They'll both be okay, but Michael is...
Layla lowered her gaze.
He's a tough diver, Katrina said. Try not to worry. We need to stay positive.
Any luck contacting Deliverance? Asked Les, stepping forward.
She shook her head.
Still can't break through that electrical storm. Haven't been able to reach the Hive or the Seawolf either.
At least you got what you wanted, right? Layla asked. Katrina frowned.
How do you mean?
This boat. I hope it's worth the price we paid back at Red Sphere. Layla took a step ahead of Les, a bold act in a place where once officers had never dared question their superiors. Katrina wasn't a military leader, but she couldn't let her young friend get away with such blatant disrespect in front of her second-in-command.
You're out of line, Layla, Katrina said, matching Layla's step with two of her own so that they stood face to face. I don't expect you to agree with every decision I make. I do, however, expect you to trust me. I know that what happened is tragic, but we needed this destroyer.
For what?
To take the Metal Islands?
Her tone bordered on incredulous.
We don't even know they exist. For all we know, it was some made-up bullshit that X thought he heard when the Cazadores captured him. He wasn't all there when we first found him, you know. The Cazadores are real, and so are the islands they come from. We don't have an army to take them when the time comes, but we do have something the Cazadores don't have. Les swallowed, his Adam's apple bobbing. He remained silent, stiff, and respectful. For a moment, Katrina saw a naval officer standing in front of her just as one might have done 260 years ago. Layla, on the other hand, still seemed to want to argue. Katrina cupped her hands behind her back and walked over to the porthole windows to look out over the waves. "Do you remember the prophecy Jordan tried to cut out like a cancer when he killed Jenga? Her prophecy of a man leading us to a new home in the ocean?" She turned back to the two divers. "I was never one to believe in stuff like that. Fairy tales is what I call them. But," she forced a smile, "the sea wolf made me believe. Finding X made me believe." "So now you're putting all your trust in a prophecy?" Layla asked. "In something based on the words of a woman that we all agree was crazy?" "I trusted you, Captain, up until the point you sent us to the Red Sphere when you knew damn well it wasn't safe. All so you could get this boat."
"Captain DeVita risked her life to save ours," Les said. "I say you give her some credit."
Letting out a sigh, Katrina walked back over to Layla and Les. She put a hand on Layla's shoulder and waited for her to meet her gaze.
"I have a plan. You have to trust me. I know that plan may put Michael at risk because of how he feels about X, and I know that's where some of your angst comes from, but we have to think of the future of humanity."
Layla's eyes flitted to the floor, then back up to hers.
"I know. I'm sorry. I do trust you." "No need to apologize. Every captain has had a different plan for the souls aboard the Hive. Mine is just as fragile as the others, but it gives us all hope."
Layla took a deep breath.
"Okay."
"Let's try the radio again," Katrina said. "Layla, let's take a walk." She guided Layla out of the bridge and up a ladder to the command center.
"They used to call this the island," Katrina said. "Best view on the ship. I should really get back to Michael. I thought he was sleeping." "He is." "Just stay up here for 1 minute," Katrina said. "I want you to see something."
The hatch at the top of the ladder opened to a room no wider than 20 feet. The cracked glass windows provided them a panoramic view of the ship and the ocean around them. Lightning speared the clouds overhead, firing up the sky for a single moment before letting it shade back into dark. Katrina walked over to a view of the bow. Although they were more than 150 feet above, she could still see Jaideep down on the weather deck, his battery unit spreading a cool blue glow over the metal surface. A heavy mist hovered over the ocean. They were heading farther and farther away from Red Sphere.
"Quite the view," Layla said. "Yes, it is."
Katrina looked up at the sky, wondering where Deliverance was in this moment.
"Did you want to talk to me about something?" Layla asked, turning slightly to study Katrina in the sporadic flashes of lightning. "No. I just wanted you to see this view. To understand why I have made the decisions I've made."
Layla nodded as if she understood, but Katrina wasn't sure anyone could understand what was going on in her mind and heart. Michael was a good man, one of the best left in this apocalyptic world. Her orders had almost killed him on this mission. Of course Layla resented Katrina for it. On top of that, the events of the past few months continued to fill her with the poison of regret. Losing her child was the worst part. Katrina had never felt so alone in her life. Part of her had wanted to die back at Red Sphere.
"Are you okay, Captain?" Layla said.
"Yes, I'm..."
Katrina's words trailed off when she saw something in the wake of a lightning bolt.
"What is that?"
Layla followed her gaze toward the radio towers overhead. Halfway up, a figure clung to one of the metal posts.
"Is that a body?" Katrina asked. "Sure looks like one, but it's got to be 50 feet above us."
Katrina reached for her holstered blaster, but slowly let her hand fall back down when the next lightning flash showed the skeletal corpse. Not a threat. A voice yelled up from the bridge below, and Katrina moved back to the ladder and looked down at Les.
"Commander, I just picked up a scrambled transmission from the Seawolf," he said.
Both women hurried down the ladder to the command center where they met at the communication station. The worried mask on Les's face told Katrina something was wrong.
"It's an SOS," he said. "Here, listen."
Magnolia's voice crackled through the room.
"If anyone picks this up, we're at the following coordinates and need help. We're under attack by Cazadores. Several boats. X is overboard. I'm trying to..."
The feed fizzled out.
"Did you get the coordinates?" Katrina asked.
Les nodded.
"Hold on. There's more."
He twiddled the knob. Static filled the room, then cleared.
"We found the metal islands," Magnolia said. "They're real. They're real, and there's sun here."
"My God, they found it," Layla whispered.
Les looked up at Katrina, eyes wide with amazement and fear. Fear for their friends. Fear for the future of the airships.
"The boat is being boarded," Magnolia said. "I don't have long, but here are the coordinates. If we die, don't let it be for nothing. Bring Deliverance and the Hive here. This is what we've all been dream-"
The feed shut off.
"How long ago was this message sent?" Katrina asked.
"I'm not sure, but I did manage to get the coordinates," Les said.
He took a seat at a station, typed, and said,
"Here's a map."
Layla leaned over to read.
"Pew, Erda Riku," she mumbled.
"Virgin Islands, actually," Les said, "but not quite. The metal islands look to be off the coast."
Katrina took a few seconds to think before giving orders she had never thought she would give.
"Set the course and gather everyone. It's time to start planning for a war."
Magnolia stared out at what was supposed to be her future home, the place in Jenga's prophecy where the population of the Hive was to live. X was supposed to lead them here. And lead them he had. But when they finally discovered the metal islands, things hadn't quite gone according to plan. In fact, things could not have gone much worse. She had pinned her only hope on a last-minute SOS to the Hive and Deliverance, a final act before the Cazadores broke down the command center hatch and beat her into submission. Her swollen eyelids all but blocked out the view of the oil rigs in the distance, but she forced them open to see the clusters of towers. The rusted metal poles and platforms rose out of the water like scrapers built in the ocean. Smoke billowed from the slow-moving boat's makeshift stack, choking her every time the wind shifted. The slow ride gave her plenty of time to check out this strange city on water as she contemplated her fate. If she was going to die, she at least could die having seen the sun. Rays streamed through a gap in the clouds that seemed to go on for miles. The Cazadores were taking full advantage of the sunshine. Solar panels hung off the decks like satellite dishes pointing toward the sky for a signal, feeding energy to the people here. Lush plants grew out of rectangular troughs at the edge of several of the levels. The vibrant canopies and vines drooped over the edge like a green waterfall. Dozens of platforms and the top of the oil rigs were dedicated to green and brown plots of farmland. There were even... could those be real? She tried to push herself up for a better view over the smoke, but her ribs ached and her eyelids were continuing to swell. Grasping the bars, she pulled herself up until her head bumped the bars overhead. On the upper decks of the oil rigs, thick brown trunks supported leafy green branches that arched toward the sunlight. This was no garden. This was a forest full of mature trees.
Real freaking trees.
Roger would have loved this place. Miles growled beside her, obviously not as impressed with the view as she was. He snarled at an approaching Cazador soldier who banged the outside of the cage with the butt of his spear gun.
"Cállate, perro,"
the man growled, baring sharp teeth of his own.
"Cállate!"
Magnolia put her fingers to her swollen eye. The man gave a pitiless grin. He was one of the three who had beaten her on the Seawolf and ripped her shirt.
"I'm going to cut that hand off soon."
She just needed a chance to escape. Either that, or to hold on long enough for X to mount a rescue. Knowing him, he was already coming up with a plan. She prayed that Katrina had picked up her SOS.
If they're still alive.
Something told her X was still out there, but she had no idea what had happened to the divers at Red Sphere. The guilt and pain hit her hard, a messy combination that filled her with a deep despair. Being trapped like a wild animal in this cage didn't help. She grabbed the bars and shouted, "Let me out of here!" The men exchanged glances and then broke into deep laughter, one of them gripping his belly. He was laughing so hard. "Go ahead and laugh it up, you ugly fools," she hissed, backing away from the bars. Her body hurt all over from the beating back on the seawolf. She had fought hard, killing one of the cazadores. She could see the body lying on the deck near the stern, dark blood pooled around it. Fucker isn't laughing now. To the right of the corpse lay her gear and helmet, the only connection she still had to the outside world. Miles nudged up against her side. He had a nasty cut on his forehead, and she was surprised he was still standing. The fight replayed in her mind as she tried to calm the dog. The three Cazador soldiers had broken into the Seawolf and climbed down the ladder to the first deck where she had killed the first man. She might have gotten the other two, but her magazine had jammed, and by the time she grabbed her curved blade, they were running down the hallway. She would have slammed the hatch, but Miles jumped out to attack them. That was when he caught a rifle butt to the head. When Miles went limp, she had done the stupidest thing ever and run screaming at the two attackers with her blade out. She hacked and stabbed, but their thick armor reflected most of the blows, and within seconds they had her on the deck, where they beat her until she stopped fighting. Pinned to the deck, she was helpless as they stripped her down to her t-shirt and pants. The bastard with the rotting grin ripped her shirt, exposing her breasts, but a third man had come inside and shook his head.
"Aún no," he had said.
Magnolia swallowed at the memory. She sensed that they were saving her for someone, and she had an idea who. She pulled her torn shirt across her chest and scooted away from the bars, avoiding the gaze of her would-be rapist. The boat slowed again as they approached the cluster of oil rigs. Several of the structures had bridges connecting them. People fanned out across them for a look at the prisoners as the vessel approached. She pulled Miles close, wrapping her arms around him. His blue eyes darted across the decks, and his nostrils flared, taking in information.
"Don't worry. X is coming for us," she whispered,
though the words didn't reassure her all that much. She tried to keep her fear in check, but she knew what would happen to them shortly. The Cazadores were going to rape and probably torture her and eat Miles. She had to do something. But what could she do? Hundreds of people stood on the platforms and the bridges between them. She was close enough now to see their grubby skin and tattered clothes, which reminded her of lower deckers on the Hive. Many were heavily tattooed, with skin bronzed by a life outdoors, nothing like the pale complexions of people who had never seen the sun in all their lives. A few had skin that gleamed almost black, and scattered among them were others almost as pale as she was, with straw-colored hair even lighter than Captain DeVita's. Surely these people or their ancestors had come from many different places. As the boat passed under the first bridge, several of the adults, and even some of the children, opened their mouths and clacked their sharpened teeth together. Their origins didn't matter, she realized. They were cannibals, the lot of them, as foreign to her as if she were making first contact with an alien race. The clacking of teeth and squawking of children rose into a macabre cacophony. Magnolia wondered whether inbreeding had played a part in their devolution. There had to be something going on. Normal humans weren't supposed to act this wild and barbaric. She remembered when she was younger reading Locke's concept of the state of nature. The social contract theories delved into hypothetical conditions of what life was like before societies came into existence. The Metal Islands clearly had some sort of social structure, but they were vastly less civilized than the Hive. On the airship, they had strict rules about not breeding with family members and not eating one another for starters. Both those terrible acts resulted in physical and mental problems. Most of the people she saw seemed crazy, and not the kind of crazy she could see in X after his 10 years alone on the surface, more like demented. Their hollow gazes, squawks, clacking teeth, and hollering followed the boat as it passed between the rigs. Magnolia took in a breath that smelled like manure and roasted meat. She saw the source just overhead, where an entire deck of pigs and other livestock roamed on a dirt-covered floor. On the next deck, a roasting pig turned slowly over a low fire. The boat continued between the slits of the third rig, which blocked all else from view. The Cazador soldier rattled his spear gun across the bars to get her attention. He leered at Magnolia, his eyes on her chest.
"Eres muy caliente," he said.
"Fuck you," she said, and gave a flick of her chin, a gesture that transcended the language barrier, a subtle way to tell him to screw off. This just made his smile even wider. He snapped his fingers at the driver of the boat, yelling, "Caliente!" and then panting like a dog. Miles let out a low whine.
"It's okay," she whispered.
But it wasn't okay. This was supposed to be heaven, not hell. She would have preferred to face sirens in Hades than these inbred, brutish cannibals.
"Rápido!"
yelled one of the Cazadores. The pilot pushed down on the control stick and the boat surged ahead, picking up speed and creating a sizable wake behind them. She turned to watch the Cazadores on the oil rigs. A girl on one of the decks raised a hand and waved at Magnolia. The mother slapped her hand. A memory surfaced in Magnolia's mind, of her own mother doing the same thing many years ago. That was the worst part about her memories from that age. She remembered only the bad ones, at least about her parents, because there were no good ones. She sighed and turned back to stern. In the distance, dozens of rigs rose above the water, shimmering in the sun. This wasn't just a city of islands. It was a small state. There had to be hundreds of people living here, perhaps even thousands. How could the Hive and Deliverance fight that many? They were down to just under 500 people and most weren't fighters. Hell, most of them weren't even well. There was another option, of course. If you can't fight them, join them. Maybe she should try to make peace, negotiate the fate of her people with whoever was in charge here. Maybe there was a way to live in harmony. Another memory surfaced in her mind. The day that El Pulpo had skewered Roger like a bug. No, there was no negotiating with these people. The man with the spear gun yelled at her, but she ignored him, stroking Miles softly behind the ears. She had to stay strong for when the end came. The boat continued toward the rig, a two-story structure with an open roof. Instead of slowing, as before, the driver picked up speed and swung around the platforms, giving Magnolia a view of what the Cazadores were storing inside their warehouse. Shriveled drapes hung from hooks in the open floors. But no, not drapes at all. There were hundreds of fish and other animals, filleted and drying in the sun that streamed in through the open roof. Magnolia squeezed Miles tight when she saw the light gray hide of a sea creature she had always dreamed of seeing since first she saw them in a book as a child. Two Cazador workers used a hatchet to cleave away hunks from the recently caught dolphin. Blood ran down the drying flesh and added to that on the deck. "No," she choked. How could these people kill such a splendid animal, among the smartest on the planet? A tear caressed her cheek. She looked away from the slaughterhouse to watch a ship carving through the water to the west, away from the dark horizon where the storms still reigned. Containers were packed three deep on the deck. The ship must be returning from a supply run to the mainland. As they drew closer, Magnolia could see on the deck cages like her own. Animals of some sort were moving inside them. Over the cough of the engine rose the electronic wails that had haunted her sleep since her first dive. Not animals. Sirens. She hugged Miles at the ghastly sight that further confirmed there was no making peace with these people. The Cazadores didn't just eat humans. They ate dolphins and captured sirens to use for God only knew what. She couldn't imagine the civilized people on the Hive and Deliverance ever coexisting with such horrid people. But when Helldivers did make it here and went to war with the Cazadores, they would try to save everyone who was willing to join the civilized society they had established in the skies. If the Helldivers came. She just had to hope they would, and survive until then.
"It's going to be okay, buddy," Magnolia whispered. Our friends are coming for us.
20. Michael awoke to a cold touch on his left arm. In the dim light, his eyes confirmed that no, his missing right arm was not just a dream. He raised the stump, covered now in a fresh bandage.
Tin, Layla whispered.
He batted his eyelids, trying to see through the blur and remember why he was lying in a dark room that smelled like rain. The single recessed light illuminated several empty beds and an operating table. He remembered then, all of it. The memories of Red Sphere came crashing over him in a tsunami of emotions that ended with the thought of X, Magnolia, and Miles. He was in the medical bay aboard the USS Zion, and Aaron was dead. Ramon, too.
Michael, can you hear me? Layla said.
Have we heard from the Seawolf?
I'm not sure.
Layla's face came into focus then, and despite her frazzled hair and swollen eyes, she looked more beautiful than ever. She smiled and bent down to kiss his forehead. The touch softened the blow of his memories.
Sorry to wake you, but there's something Katrina wants to tell us, Layla whispered. You up for some exercise?
Yeah, but just give me a minute. I'm really dizzy.
The pain medicine had made him so drowsy he could hardly sit up without seeing stars. He hated asking for help, but he was smart enough to know when he needed it. He draped his left arm around Layla's neck. She folded the centuries-old blankets that Les had brought them and propped them under his back. The rough, scratchy material made his skin itch, and the dust prompted a sneeze. Jolting forward sent a wave of pain through his body, but it quickly subsided. The painkillers were doing their job, but they were making him so tired he could hardly function.
Feel better?
Layla asked. He answered by swinging his legs over the bed and resting his feet on the cold deck. Standing, he waited for a new wave of dizziness to pass.
You good?
She asked.
Yeah.
He looked over at the bed formerly occupied by Edgar Cervantes. Bloody rags littered the floor.
He's topside, Layla said. Everyone is.
Okay. I'm ready.
Michael groaned and took the first few steps across the medical bay. They stopped for Layla to open the hatch and then began working their way down a passageway covered in grime.
What's so important that Katrina couldn't come down here? Michael asked.
You'll have to hear this from her.
He shot her a sideways glance, halting right before they reached the first ladder. An overhead light flickered, shrouding them momentarily in darkness. When it warmed back to life, the glow spread over bulkheads streaked with black mold. She met his gaze but still wouldn't tell him what was going on. The ship groaned and rocked subtly, an indication they were picking up speed.
"We in a hurry?" he asked.
"Katrina will explain everything in a few minutes."
A voice came from the top of the ladder well.
"Cap's waiting, Commander Everhart."
It was Jadeep. He stood at the next landing, still clutching his rifle. Michael hurried with Layla's support, a sudden burst of energy fueling his body. He had a feeling he knew what this was about. They trekked through the rest of the stealth warship in silence but for the click of their boots on the metal deck. When they reached the bridge, everyone was already there. Les, Katrina, Trey, and Jadeep stood near the portholes, looking out over the dark sky. Edgar sat in a chair, a bandage wrapped around his muscular torso.
"Captain," Layla said as they entered.
Katrina turned and smiled warmly at Michael.
"How are you, Commander?"
"Well enough, I suppose. What's this all about?"
Waves burst over the bow, and the ship pitched forward a few degrees. Michael groped for Layla, who helped steady him.
"Have a seat, Michael," Katrina said.
"No, thanks. I'm okay standing. Tell me what's going on. Is it X? Did something happen to X and Max?"
Michael caught Katrina's gaze.
"Magnolia and X found the metal islands," she said.
Layla held Michael tighter, and Jadeep stopped fidgeting with his gold earring. Edgar stood, trying to keep a straight face through the pain he was surely experiencing. Trey was the first to speak.
"Where? Where are they?"
"Off the Western Virgin Islands," Katrina said. "But before we celebrate, I have bad news." Things didn't go to plan when the Seawolf arrived. After receiving the initial messages from Magnolia, we received a message from Timothy Pepper. She pushed a button on the station beside where she stood.
Captain DeVita, this is Timothy Pepper. The Seawolf has been raided by Cazadores. Magnolia and Miles have been captured, and Commander Rodriguez is currently pursuing the men who took them.
Michael's heart sank at the news, and all the energy he had felt earlier drained away. His knees suddenly felt as if they were going to buckle. A second message followed the first.
I will continue to report any updates until the batteries are drained or the Seawolf is destroyed.
The feed shut off, and Michael stumbled past Katrina. Layla reached out for him, but he evaded her grip.
Where's the comm station? He said.
For the first time in hours, he was thinking about something other than the pain. He moved from station to station as Layla called out after him.
Michael, calm down.
Katrina followed him and then pointed toward a row of stations near a cracked glass window.
I've already changed course, she said.
He stopped and turned to face the other divers. We're on our way to the coordinates Magnolia sent, but we're a long way from them, Katrina said.
And Michael, I know this is going to sting, because I can hardly bear the thought myself. But for all we know, they're already dead.
No. They're alive, Michael replied.
Perhaps, Les said.
But by the time we get there, they probably will be. Assuming we have enough battery to even get there at all.
I'm sorry, Commander, we're just stating the truth.
Michael looked down at the archaic radio controls, trying to figure out where the handset was. Reaching out with his right stump, he tried to grab it, but his reflexes still hadn't registered that he was missing an arm. Michael swore, frustration breaking through. He swiped the handset off the station, but with only one hand, he had no way of turning the dial.
Ten, Layla whispered.
When he turned, everyone was staring at him.
Someone fucking help me contact Timothy, he snapped.
Les moved over and spun the knob to the channel he was apparently using to talk to the Seawolf.
Timothy, this is Commander Everhart, do you copy? Michael said.
Static. He could feel the eyes on his back, but he didn't care.
Timothy, do you copy?
A long flurry of white noise ensued, and then a voice.
Roger, Commander Everhart, this is Timothy Pepper of the Seawolf.
Michael blinked away the stars before his vision, pushing out a tear. He didn't care who saw it.
Timothy, do you know where X is now? How about Miles and Magnolia?
X is still giving chase and is reporting multiple contacts.
Define multiple, Michael replied.
Thousands. There are thousands of Cazadores, maybe more. They are well armed, too, sir. I'm still picking up the beacons for Miles and Magnolia, so I know they are alive.
Katrina stepped up next to Michael, her arms folded across her chest.
Pepper, this is Captain DeVita. Can you tell us exactly how many of these platforms there are?
I count 20 within sight, Captain. It's possible there are even more Cazadores in other locations, but again, this is just a guess based on what I can see from my current location and what Commander Rodriguez has been reporting.
Keep us updated, Michael said. We're on our way.
Roger, sir.
Michael slowly lowered the handset back into its slot on the station. Then he sat in the leather chair, holding his bandaged stump, defeated.
They have an army, Les said.
More than an army.
Everyone looked to Katrina.
We have to find a way to contact Deliverance, she said. The ship is armed with missiles and nukes.
You want to nuke the Metal Islands? Les stammered.
Of course not. But I want to bring all the firepower to this fight that we can. We have 472 passengers aboard Deliverance and the Hive. We can't put them all at risk.
Michael felt Katrina studying him in the shadows.
We're down to a handful of Helldivers, she said, and from the sounds of it, there are a lot of Cazadores. I can't risk the lives on the Hive and Deliverance for a chance at taking this as our future home, and we can't destroy this future home either.
Michael knew he wasn't in any condition to fight, but there had to be a way to fight the Cazadores and save X, Magnolia, and Miles.
We have to try something, he said.
We're helldivers. We don't give up. We do what it takes, even when the mission looks impossible. That's what has kept us alive in the sky all these years.
Katrina nodded. I've got a plan, Commander. I just need time to allow it to work.
X was running out of time and gasoline. The gauge on the wave runner said the damn thing was almost out of fuel. He steered toward the flaming wreckage of the fishing boat he had stopped with a grenade. Pulling up alongside, he swung up onto the deck and searched for gasoline. Two rusted canisters sat inside a crate with an open lid. He grabbed them both and returned to the wave runner.
You got any updates on Mags and Miles?
X asked over the channel to Timothy. The AI was still within range and monitoring the beacons for Magnolia and Miles.
They're still on the move, sir.
Are they alive?
X was afraid to ask, but he had to know.
Yes, according to their life support readings.
X unscrewed the plastic top from the tank on the wave runner, looking up as he worked. The Seawolf drifted in the distance, the sails both burned away and the mast broken at the top. The last wisps of gray smoke drifted away from the disabled craft.
What about Katrina? Have you been able to reach her again?
I heard from Commander Everhart and Captain DeVita, sir. They know our coordinates and situation, but I've just lost contact with them due to the electrical storms.
X looked over his shoulder to the oil rigs on the horizon. Several boats were inching across the water now. Reinforcements. It was about time. X carefully poured the gasoline into the wave runner's tank. The scent filled his nostrils. He hadn't smelled it in a very long time. Gasoline was rare, and most of the time it didn't work. But somehow, the Cazadores had a supply of good quality fuel, which meant they must have a way of refining it that he couldn't see. How they had gotten here and where they came from was another question. Was it possible there were more rigs out there, or other places where these people made up their home?
X pushed aside the questions, screwed the cap back on, and strapped the canisters on board. Straddling the wave runner, he fired the engine back up and gave the throttle a twist. It shot forward toward the boats sailing for the Seawolf.
Let's see what you can do, X whispered.
He gunned the engine, and the little craft went bobbing over the swells. The weapons he had salvaged from the Seawolf slapped his body with each jolt. Over his back, he carried a bolt-action rifle. A blaster and two handguns were holstered on his duty belt, and a submachine gun hung from a strap over his chest. The ancient gun had some rust, but he had tested it, and it worked fine. The three extended magazines held 50 rounds each. Two grenades hung from his vest, and he had a brick of plastic explosives in the pack tethered to the back of the wave runner. It wasn't enough to take on an army, but it could inflict some major damage. It was time to make these fuckers pay. He twisted the throttle again, his hand aching from the barbed wire cuts. Blood oozed onto the handlebar. The boats ahead were all packed full of Cazadores, at least a dozen men, maybe some women, though it was hard to tell from this distance. He could see three vessels, all of them under sail. They weren't wasting gas now that the threat had been neutralized, as far as they knew. Motion flashed in his peripheral vision. He quickly turned to his left, following gray shadows that moved fast just under the surface of the water. He felt a jolt of fear when he realized they were sea creatures, mere feet away from his exposed legs. Keeping his right hand on the throttle, he raised the submachine gun in his left. Then one of the beasts leaped, breaching the surface in a long, smooth arc. The light gray hide and dorsal fin sparkled in the sunlight before it hit the water with barely a splash. This wasn't some sea monster at all. It was a majestic creature that he had never thought he would see. And it wasn't alone. A large group of dolphins swam alongside the wave runner. Leaping and poking their heads through the water, they seemed to be studying him. Their squeaking chatter seemed a mix of laughter and conversation as more of the beautiful creatures broke the surface. He lowered the gun and kept his course at the approaching boats. They were narrowing the distance now, and he could see several men on the decks working the sails. The dolphins suddenly veered away and disappeared beneath the waves. Either they had decided he was an enemy, or they were leery of the approaching Cazadores. The bastards probably ate these beautiful mammals, just as they were going to eat Miles,
But not if I get to you first.
X worked on calming his breath as the boats neared. They were only a quarter mile out now, and he slowed the wave runner to a crawl.
What's their status, Pepper?
X asked. Magnolia and Miles are still on the move, sir.
But they're alive?
It appears so, sir. Dozens of faces on the boats focused on him as he sat waiting, waving for them to slow. Pretending to scratch his chin, he pushed the comm bead away from his lips and tucked it under his collar. Two of the sailboats slowed, while the third started its engine and motored toward the Seawolf. The men on deck didn't bother looking in his direction. X repeated in his mind the words that Timothy had told him to use.
Yo maté al intruso. Yo maté al intruso.
Raising his bandaged hand, X shouted the words that meant he had killed the trespasser, using exactly the inflection Timothy had taught him. The men in the two sailboats wore sun-faded brown fatigues and rusted armor plates over their chests. Only a few of them had the breathing apparatus he had seen them wear back in Florida, and none had heavy armor. A bald man with tattoos on his sweaty scalp waved a rust-covered pistol in one gloved hand while gesturing to X with the other.
Vamanos, he said.
X wasn't sure what that meant, but the body language suggested it was time to move. His disguise had worked, apparently, since the men hadn't riddled his body with bullets or impaled him on spears. It had been a brazen plan, stripping the dead Cazador on the Seawolf of his clothes and then swimming to the wave runner with his gear and weapons, but so far it was working. They had no idea he wasn't one of them. The only downside was being unable to track Miles and Magnolia with his HUD. With his armor and helmet strapped behind him on the wave runner, he must use Timothy as his eyes. The Cazadores would never find the body X had dumped into the ocean, but it was only a matter of time before they caught on. The bald man yelled at X again, gesturing for him to get off the wave runner. X raised his own hand, hoping to calm the soldier.
Espera un minuto,
another man said to the first. He stepped up beside the other man and ran a hand over his thinning hair.
Un momento,
the man said to X. X understood this much. And his heart kicked when two other men, who had been working the sails, walked over to look at him. The wave runner had drifted right between the two boats. More men moved over to the side of the other vessel to look at him. He was surrounded. The man who had first hailed him pulled out a long machete from a leather sheath at his side. He raised a pair of goggles to have a better look at X.
Ricardo?
He asked. It was a question, and apparently not a rhetorical one. X was out of time. The ruse had played out.
Ricardo?
The man persisted. He received his answer a moment later, when X raised the submachine gun in his left hand while unholstering his blaster with the other. Raking the submachine gun over the deck on his left, he fired a flare from the blaster at the gas canisters sitting on the deck of the boat to his right. He pulled the trigger a second time, discharging a shotgun round at a man with a spear gun on the second boat, blowing a sizable divot off the top of his skull. Two of the soldiers on the left boat fell into the water, and three others dropped onto the deck. X lowered his blaster and moved the submachine gun to his right arm to steady the barrel as he squeezed off bursts at the men on his right. Screams and shouts came from both directions, and empty bullet casings arced into the water as X took more calculated shots. When the magazine was empty, he let the gun sag on its sling, holstered his blaster, and took a grenade from his vest. He pulled the pin and tossed it onto the boat on his left, then squeezed the throttle lever. The gasoline canisters on the boat to his right lit up almost simultaneously with the detonation of the grenade on the other vessel. The heat hit his back as he shot away on the wave runner, and he felt shrapnel whiz past. When he was at a safe distance, he slowed the wave runner and unslung the bolt-action rifle. Bringing the scope to his eye, he saw several Cazadores burning on the deck, flailing and crashing into one another. Others had been blown into the water or jumped overboard, where they struggled to keep their heads above the surface.
"Time's up,"
X said, lining up the sights. One by one, he fired rounds into their skulls, turning the water around them red. When he had finished with the soldiers in the water, he searched for the third boat, which was now circling the Seawolf.
"You're about to have company, sir," Pepper said.
X pushed the mic bead back to his mouth but didn't respond. He sat on the wave runner as it bobbed on the water. Using his arm as a crutch, he tried his best to steady the carbine.